I like Be Well because it isn't Have a Good Evening. I throw Have a Good Evening in as well. But being well is not about having a good evening. Being well is about be well, you know, mentally well, physically well. Hope you feel well. And I just like the idea of being well. I do like the idea of being lucky, but I love the idea of being well.
Steve Murphy has been a broadcaster for 45 years and the anchor of CTV Atlantic's evening news show since 1993. On Tuesday, November 30th, he will thank his colleagues on both sides of the camera for the last time. He joins me to talk about the big stories of his career, the meaning of stepping aside from the job, and what's next. I'm Tara Thorne, and this is The Tideline. A very special show for you this week. One of my heroes, Steve Murphy, is my guest. But before he graces us with a real broadcaster's voice, I want to play you a new Christmas jam from Catherine McClellan. Catherine will be joined on Friday by Tanya Davis and Tara Spencer for a holiday spectacular at St. Andrew's Church. And as of this recording, tickets are still available. For now, here's Calling You Home for the Holidays.
Shining for you.
Steve Murphy. Hello.
Hey, Tara.
This language, stepping aside, is very specific. Steve Murphy is stepping aside. Tell me what that means.
I don't know. A lot of people are making more of it than it really is. I'm not leaving the television industry. I'm not totally leaving CTV.
Okay.
But I am literally stepping aside from the anchor desk so someone else can sit there and do what I've been doing for close to 30 years, which is the news at 6 o'clock every day. So I think stepping aside is accurate. I guess maybe there have been certain inferences drawn from it, but there's really nothing more to it than that.
I mean, I didn't think it was that you'd been shoved aside.
Not at all.
I just thought stepping aside means he's not quitting. He's not retiring.
Yeah, so, I don't like the word retirement. Mm-hmm. I understand some people do retire literally from what they're doing and go away and become a recluse. I'm not going to do that. I don't intend to do nothing. I just intend to do different things.
Okay.
I want to keep doing interviews, analysis, commentary, and CTV has graciously said, yes, let's go ahead and do that. Mm-hmm. I am ready, though, after almost 45 years of daily newscasting, to give up the rote.
Right.
And that is the thing from which I am stepping aside.
Sure. That
very odd construction of language. But you know what I'm driving at. That's what I want to wrap up.
Have they flagged your replacement? Is that something you can say?
I could say if I know. I don't know. Here on November 23rd, I know there's been a process undertaken. I'm personally aware of lots of people who would like to have a shot at the job.
Sure.
And I don't blame them. I've said to others, Tara, and I'll say for you and your listeners today, I've had one of the best jobs in broadcasting in Canada. Certainly the best job, I think, in television in Atlantic Canada. And there are a lot of people in our company, outside our company, in our region, outside our region, who would like to have the job. But I don't know who the contenders are.
Sure.
I'm aware of some people who've been interviewed, but I understand it's been a multi-step process, as it probably should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I can sit here, in all honesty and candor, and tell you I do not know. I'm looking forward to finding out who the person will be, but I don't know.
You know, you come from a kind of dying generation of anchors. And when Don Connolly retired, this was something that we talked about a lot too. You know, he was on Information Morning for 42 years.
Yep.
And that simply doesn't happen anymore. It doesn't exist. Yeah. So whoever replaces you is not going to have 30 years on the show.
Probably not. Probably not. But how many people are staying in any job for 20 or 30 or 40 years?
Yeah.
The economy has changed a great deal. Our industry has changed a great deal. Who knows what television is going to look like in 5 years, let alone 50 years? Who would have predicted 20 years ago that we would be doing daily television and then streaming it and then offering some products on a pay-per-view and others on a delayed basis? So I think, you know, there could be a long run in this for somebody, but expect a lot of change. Expect a lot of change.
Totally. Yeah. You know, I ran into you in about 6 months ago and
it was in a beer and wine store. Let's put it out there, Tara.
It was at the Rockhead in the middle of the
We were exploring our mutual shared interest in Irish beverages, and I'm not talking about a cup of tea.
You were talking about COVID, and this is, you know, I know we're all tired of it, but I think something that people don't understand is the news people. You not only did you not get a day off, you did not get to work from home. I mean, you personally probably didn't, but you know, people did. Everything changed, but you still had to not just work while everyone else kind of got to be sad in this time, but then also you had to tell the stories, all the awful stories. Can you tell me a bit about that, how the past year and a half has been?
Yeah, sure. Well, to begin with, we in television news were able to continue doing studio-centered programming. Not all of our competitors did. The CBC made a decision not to do it, a decision they probably regret. We decided to do more local, not less. It was a great strain on our people, our shooters, our producers, our reporters. Sure, it was a strain on all of us. I think that the people who work in the field gathering the news have had a much more difficult time than those of us who are in the production center have had. But it's been exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
It's been exhausting. But doesn't that really explain how it's been for everybody? Aren't we all just plain tired of it all?
Yeah.
And the thing about the role that COVID has played in the daily news agenda is that for the first and only time in my years in the journalism business, one subject has influenced every story every day. It's getting a little less so now, but for about 15 to 16 months, The shadow of COVID was cast upon every story. It must have been like this during the Second World War, mm-hmm. where every decision that was taken, every emotion, every fact was shaded by the war. And again, I'm not going to compare the pandemic to the war because I didn't live through the war. We've all lived through the pandemic. It's been a pretty miserable dark shadow from which we are only now beginning to emerge. But it's been exhausting, I think, for all of us.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like audiences doubled down on your coverage? Because, well, one, they were in their house watching stuff.
Probably.
But two, like everyone wanted, as much as we were all kind of tortured by all the information, like I at a certain point would be like, I don't want, just tell me the rules and I'll do the rules. I don't want to hear the rest.
Yep.
Did you see viewership go up? Did you see more engagement?
Well, curiously, there have been no ratings during the pandemic.
Oh.
There have been no television ratings during the pandemic. Anecdotally, I think viewership has probably gone up for the first, principally the reason you mentioned, people were at home. Many people had nothing else to do. I'd like to think that wouldn't be the only reason you would watch. But I also think that the demand or the need for information was much higher. People wanted to know, you know, where is the virus? What do I need to be concerned about? How do I need to change my behavior? But people also wanted to know what was being done scientifically about the virus. What were we learning in other countries or other provinces? How were their experiences maybe informing what we were going to do in Nova Scotia? And here in the province, the daily briefings, and they were daily for a while, mm-hmm. with Rob Strang and Stephen McNeil, became must-see TV.
Yeah.
People would really base their entire day, I include myself in this, mm-hmm. Around watching those two gentlemen give us the latest information in that sort of good cop, bad cop
yes.
routine. And I don't mean to diminish it, but they had it down to a science.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it became a real touchstone and a gathering place for a lot of people. But so was the 6 o'clock news, I feel. And I would get a lot of feedback from people in email, phone calls, and so on about questions that had been asked, questions that had not been asked.
Mm.
When we brought Lisa Barrett on the air for the first time, and we were among the first to have Dr. Barrett come on, we were inundated with hundreds and hundreds of questions sent in by viewers, listeners, who wanted to go to the fountainhead of knowledge, mm-hmm. which she quickly became, to get a straightforward explanation to a very complicated subject or question. So I think, yes, I think viewership probably has gone up. Having said that, consumption of all media has gone up
mm-hmm.
during the pandemic, and that's a mixed blessing.
Isn't it?
Because if you want to do the forensics on where the bad information has come from, I think you have to look to some of the non-traditional, less accountable media sources.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get into a big fight here with people on social, because social media is playing a critical role in the modern age. But it has also seeded a lot of bad information that is still sprouting the poison fruit.
Yeah, for real. Well, speaking of those two, of Lisa Barrett and Robert Strang, these are people that are public servants. Strang's been in the job since 2007 or something. Mm. Like, he's been around forever. People didn't know what he did.
And
now he's on TV.
And, you know,
TV
I've said this to Rob
life.
Strang, and I've developed a professional relationship with Rob Strang, Jennifer Russell in New Brunswick,
yes.
Heather Morrison in Prince Edward Island. And I've said to all three of them, and I had them all three on together on the first anniversary of the pandemic, most of the people who've served in the offices you hold were totally anonymous.
Yeah.
Their names might have been known. Their faces certainly were not. Look, we had kids dressing up at Halloween as Dr. Strang. I had one of them come to my door.
They named a horse after him.
Exactly. And isn't that interesting, though, because I think what this proves is that people of character and knowledge in high and important public service roles, even if they're invisible or not very visible,
mm-hmm.
they're indispensable, particularly in times of crisis.
And that doesn't mean they're good on TV, though. But all these people kind of have been. Like,
yeah, they have been.
Is there someone more than others who took to it quicker, or you know, was didn't want to do it?
Well,
if it were me, I wouldn't want to do it.
I think our three in the Maritimes have been good. Bonnie Henry, terrific
in BC.
In BC.
Yeah.
Grew up, by the way, in the Maritimes.
Oh.
Went to the same high school as I did in St. John. We're trying to claim her now. Put her in the alumni news.
New Brunswick has so little.
But I think all of our public health officers, I think, have done a pretty good job. And not all of them had the training,
right?
But most of them had the knack. and have become very good at it.
Yeah. I'm gonna look at my notes here. I'm gonna cut this part out.
You're allowed. don't cut this part out.
You said that to me on 25 for 25 too. So this is actually the second podcast we've done together.
I like things that are live. I think it's okay if your listeners know that you have to stop and compose your thoughts, and that's why we interview people live or live to tape.
Yes. Well, speaking of interviews, so in the run of a show, you do top news stories, and then you throw to people, you do your bit with the weather person, you read the stocks, you do a feature interview. I've seen it a few times.
Thank you,
Out
Tara.
Of all of that, yep. What's your favorite part?
The interview.
Right.
Yep. That's the interview. I had a career rebirth when we moved to a one-hour format on CTV about 21 years ago and introduced an interview every day. Because I'd done a lot of interviews early in my career, as all reporters do, you interview people. Then I did a phone show, talk show and radio, mm-hmm. interviewed a lot of people. But I think I really got re-engaged in daily newscasting with the introduction of a long-form interview. Now, a long-form interview is something, you know, more than a minute or two or three.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we'll go 10 or 12 or 15 minutes, or even longer if necessary. But we at CTV in the Maritimes are among the only local TV stations in the country that commit to doing a long-form interview every day.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I'll tell you, it's been a joy. It hasn't always been easy,
mm-hmm.
but it's been a real joy to do it.
I mean, the thing about those interviews, a lot of people, like I want to talk to you, a lot of people don't want to talk to you.
Yep,
like they're politicians.
True.
They're people that you're going to be holding their feet to the fire.
But here's the thing. They're not really talking to me.
Yeah.
They're really talking through me. And this is true of all interviewers. You mentioned Connolly. He was a master interviewer. People didn't always like Don's questions either,
mm-hmm.
but they liked that big audience at Information Morning.
Right.
They want the big audience on CTV 6 o'clock news. They want to be able to get the message through to the voters and the public, and they really have to go through, or some of them try to go around the interview, but, you know, the public sees right through that. The audience has gotten way more sophisticated when it comes to recognizing obfuscation,
mm-hmm.
BS. And the BS meters are very finely tuned now.
Yeah.
The audience is very savvy at knowing when someone is not answering the question. And there's really only a couple of reasons why people don't answer a question. Either they don't know or they don't want you to know.
Yeah.
And the public knows that. And the public's not willing to accept either of those from people in positions of authority,
mm-hmm.
people who are accountable. The politicians and business leaders and others who succeed, I think, in interviews are people who say, I don't know, or I can't tell you, or I won't tell you, but not, here's your question and I'll give you an answer to a question you didn't ask.
Mm-hmm.
The public sees through that and does not accept it.
And I mean, you can probably see the ones coming that are going to be like that, that are going to be you trying to drag some answers out of somebody. Do you approach them differently than ones that are just like?
I think I try to use essentially the same criteria of accountability for everybody. Now, the problem is, of course, bias is really like beauty, found in the eye of the beholder or the listener. So some of my viewers are convinced that I am for this one against that one.
Right.
Really, I'm for getting the answer.
Yeah.
I'm not really, I've got no politically partisan impulses left. I got over that quite a long time ago. I dabbled around in politics when I was a teenager, and I got to see politicians, and I thought, yeah, I think politicians, most of them are trying to do a good job in a very, very hostile environment. And that really hasn't changed. I think most politicians are trying to do a good job. Part of the problem, though, Tara, is that doing a good job involves getting reelected, and
yeah.
the idea of getting reelected starts on the day after the last election.
Ugh.
Horrible. So doesn't that inform and distort and warp an awful lot of what gets said?
Is it hard not to be allowed to have opinions? Public, like, that's my whole thing.
Oh, hang on
public
a minute.
Opinions.
I've got all kinds of opinions.
That you can express publicly.
I've got all kinds of opinions. I think what people sometimes misunderstand is not that journalists aren't supposed to have opinions. We're just not supposed to allow our personal view to shape the reporting, which
yeah.
is supposed to be fair, accurate, and balanced. Again, with interviews, it's a little tricky because sometimes people infer from a question a point of view. And look, all questions are posed from a point of view.
Sure.
But it shouldn't be at least a biased point of view. It should be a critical point of view. One of the jobs I think that we are required to do in journalism is to Look at what people say and measure it against what they do. Measure what was said then versus what is said now. There's nothing wrong with somebody changing their mind. For example, politician X may say this on the 1st of June and say something totally different on the 1st of August. To me, it's perfectly acceptable if there's a good reason for the change. If there's no good reason, it can be stated. If there hasn't been a change in, you know, the fact base, then I think someone should be able to account for why they're blowing in the wind. And sometimes they're blowing in the wind because they realize the public's gotten ahead of them, right, or because they're on the wrong side. You can actually admit that.
Yeah. People like it. They like humility.
Sure. I mean, and who among us hasn't been wrong, like, today? I mean, we all make mistakes.
Totally.
But admitting mistakes has never been very popular, so.
to call back a couple of points, you, again, come from a time where people trusted their news anchor. So, you know, Cronkite, going back to Murrow, Dan Rather, whoever. That is not something that is necessarily true anymore. I feel like there used to be beacons of news, and because of the sort of democratic way news is dispensed now, we don't have that anymore. So for the person that will replace you, what kind of reception do you think that person's going to face?
I want to address the premise of the question. There are many, many more beacons now. When we had Lloyd Robertson and Harvey Kirk, and when it was Mansbridge, and when it was Peter Kent with Lisa LaFlamme, mm-hmm, or Donna Friesen, I mean, it used to be that there were only a few personalities who had the platform. So the relationship between the viewer and the anchor, the presenter, as the British called them, the Cronkiter, as they called them in the Netherlands, it was much different. It was more personal because people got most of their information, or a significant percentage of their information, from a source or a few sources. We used to talk about the 500-channel universe. I mean, pick up Google, mm-hmm, and Google anything, and you're in the 1 billion-channel universe. Now, some of the channels are a little fuzzy, a little hazy, but the fact is there are thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of channels for information. So that's what's really changed, is that most people now are getting their information from many different sources, as opposed to relying on Lloyd at 11 o'clock. Or back in the day, Lloyd at 11 o'clock on the CBC, you know, 50 years ago, there was a very, very close and personal relationship. That's changing. There's no question about it. There are more places to go for information. But here is the acid test for the consumer of information. Where are the places you can go for accurate information for which someone is editorially accountable? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we don't make mistakes. We do. When we do, you know who to call. You can call me or Dan Appleby, our news director. You can call someone in our CTV News administration. If you're really dissatisfied, you can call or contact the Broadcast Standards Council, the CRTC. We have to be accountable because we are a licensed business. We're practicing journalism on the public airwaves. The public airwaves belong to the public. So we are accountable. If you're really dissatisfied with something we report, and in fact, if it's erroneous or dangerous, you can take us to court and sue, and people do. That is how we're held accountable and should be. Mm-hmm. Ask yourself, when you're consuming any piece of information, who is accountable for what is being said here? And if it turns out to be wrong, who do I call? What do I do? That will narrow your choices dramatically.
I think the problem is no one's asking, or a lot of people aren't asking.
Some people aren't asking.
You know, like my dad, who's in his 60s, you know, he's
nothing wrong with being in your 60s.
No, not
there,
at all.
Thorne.
But
Mr. Thorne, I'm taking one for the team here.
But he sends me YouTube videos of some guy in a doctor outfit. There is no clear indication that he's actually a doctor, saying, you know, well, if you stay in your house, your immune system's going to go down, and you're going to get sick a whole bunch of other ways. And he's like, makes sense to me. And I was like, you know, you said this to me while I was literally on air on the public broadcaster. So I think, you know, we've seen with QAnon, you see how Facebook has gone so badly. That, I think, is the concern. It's like, yes, when Stephanie Domet was here, she talked a lot, too, about critical thinking, and I agree.
Well, you've got to be critical in your thinking.
But people aren't.
Well, you know, don't forget, we're in a period of evolution when it comes to learning how to coexist with all of these marvelous media forms. I'm not going to sit here, by the way, and say a bad word about the proliferation of opinion or the proliferation of facts. I am going to express some concern about the proliferation of something that is totally outrageously called fake news, a term that I will use once only to try to criticize it. There's no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
News cannot be fake by nature.
Mm-hmm.
If the information you're getting is fake, there are a lot of words to describe it. News is not one of them. And we, as people who practice news or journalism, and those who consume our information, need to run it through the filter of where is it coming from? How do you prove it? How do I know I can believe it? What do I do if it's wrong?
Mm-hmm.
How do you get it corrected? These are important criteria, and you're right, maybe we're not spending as much time on them as we should, but I think we're spending more time than we were.
Well.
Because we've just come through an intense period of, how to even describe much of what has been said in the past 5 years by people who should know better or do know better and are just saying what they think they can get away with.
Mm-hmm.
Run it through a filter.
Yeah.
Run it through several filters.
Yes.
We cold filter the beer, don't we? Cold filter the facts.
I'm going to throw some big local stories at you from the past, from your career, and I just want to see if you have any anecdotal things to tell me. The first being the Westray mining disaster.
Wow. It's still emblazoned in my memory, so many of the images from that whole time. I mean, I was there for about a week. We all went there hoping for a happy ending, and we got an unspeakable tragedy. We went there hoping for rescue. We didn't even get recovery. There has been no closure for some. Some of the remains of the miners have never, ever come to the surface. And there is a feeling, I think, in some circles that we didn't adequately learn the lessons from Westray. But I do remember the resilience of the people there. They were kind then, and the media had a tough job. The families were raw, and the whole world was there. Because this was in the infancy of satellite TV. Mm-hmm. You might remember this. You were only a child. Well, you were less than, well, you were just a tiny baby, probably.
That's kind.
Okay. But you probably don't.
I was young.
You were young.
Ish.
But the point is, we had a lot of satellite capability there, American broadcasters, international broadcasters, but it was a terribly hard time. But again, our hardship was nothing compared with what those families at the fire hall, and I can still see them gathered there, waiting, hoping for news they never got.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the world coming to Nova Scotia, Swiss Air. Now, you were on air all night. Is that correct?
It's true, yeah. We went on the air shortly after the national news signed off, and we stayed on the air until Canada AM came on. So we were on the air all night for, 7 hours, I guess.
What happens when you get that kind of a call? I assume you're home, probably asleep.
Yep. Just going to bed.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, when you get a call like that, you just put on your clothes and go to work and try to figure out what's going to happen when you get there. That's pretty much what happened that night. We realized pretty quickly that it was an international tragedy. I hate to use the word tragedy, but how tragic is it when a plane crashes in a body of water and then becomes associated with something so iconic as the beautiful lighthouse there at Peggy's? I mean, so to me, it was tragic. In that sense, it was tragic for all those families that had to come to a strange land to mourn the people who were lost. They weren't, by and large, our people. In fact, I don't think we had any local people on the plane. But we had all the local people who went out to try to do the right thing, and who embraced all of the accidental visitors that we got from Europe and from New York and all those families and so on. So it was, that was a tough one. It was different for us. Because it didn't involve the loss of our local people, but it involved so many lives lost.
Yeah, and so many people on the ground helping.
Yeah.
And in the water.
I still remember my former colleague, Kim Brunhuber, out there. He did a wonderful piece about being out and seeing the searchlight sweeping the water. And these were all people from the local fishing community, the local boating community, just out there, trying to do the humanitarian thing.
Yeah.
And waiting and hoping.
I mean, my best friend's dad is Pat Kennedy, who worked with you for a long time, and I
did not know that.
Yeah, and he.
Well, Pat was there.
Yeah, he was there, and he, you know, he still. He remembers.
With some of these things, you just won't ever forget. The imagery is hard to forget. It's impossible to forget.
Yeah. Well, I'm taking us down a real happy path here because now I want to talk about 9/11, which again, like that, a clearly unprecedented thing. And I also want to talk about getting the local angle. This is something that we used to kind of, not in 9/11, in reference to 9/11, but at the coast, we used to make fun of. Like, there was always someone who tried to find the local angle.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the old could it happen here sort of question. The thing about 9/11, though, Tara, is it was very local, particularly in the beginning, because I think we all felt very vulnerable. We didn't really know what was going on. We saw the images, most of us, of one of the aircraft going into one of the towers. And then we heard reports that other aircraft were unaccounted for.
Right.
We knew that there were thousands of aircraft in the air and they were all being ordered to land. So I think we all were feeling very vulnerable and very exposed. Of course, we had all the people, the come from aways who landed here. Our friends over in Gander have really been well recognized for what they did. Less so the people here in Halifax, people in Moncton. There were hundreds of people who were welcomed into homes. As they did in Gander. But I do think it spoke to our collective vulnerability because it was rather like when I was a kid having a vague notion of the threat of the Cold War. And I was born in 1960, so I have no real recollection of the Cuban Missile Crisis, but I do remember the idea that there were missiles pointed at us and that we somehow had a terribly hostile relationship with the Soviets. And I think we all had a bit of that sort of dark feeling about, are we under attack? Mm-hmm. Because we didn't know who the attackers were. We didn't know how many there were. We did know there were aircraft unaccounted for and so on. So maybe it was very local. It was very intimate in the beginning. And then it became very local as we opened our homes and hearts to people who, you know, found themselves here, many of whom didn't even know where here was.
Right.
You know, when you're coming from Europe on your way into New York, maybe you know Nova Scotia, maybe you don't. Mm-hmm. Many of them didn't.
Hurricane Juan, was that another all-nighter?
It was an all-nighter until the lights went out. Peter Code and I were working on the late newscast, and we'd been doing cut-ins all night. And when the last of the lights flicked out, basically the entire Halifax region was without power. We figured that was about it for then, so we left. Peter actually drove me home. We almost wiped out on the way home at Yonge and Roby Street, as a matter of fact. Peter was driving a van of some sort, and the wind came along and almost blew us over. I was only living down in the West End at that time. And back in the next morning, and I remember I walked to work up Yonge Street and over to Roby Street. It's only about a 15-minute walk, but the amount of damage that I witnessed on the way to work was shocking. And we did get on the air that morning, although we had no local signal, I don't think, because the transmitters were down. But the ASN signal was going out via satellite. So people outside the Halifax area and outside Nova Scotia were able to see what was going on. Not so much in the local market.
I was in Lower Sackville and nothing happened. Like, the power went out, but nothing fell down. It wasn't interesting.
No.
And then all of my friends were like, I have hot water and these people don't. So we're like having people over and we're barbecuing and having
there was
showers.
A lot of that.
I didn't get to do
any of that. Okay. Well,
I'm just complaining about how my hurricane wasn't how I wanted it to be.
Look, the hurricane was very, very different depending on where you lived. It was different in downtown Dartmouth than it was in downtown Halifax. The peninsula took quite a dramatic hit and had the infrastructure that was very vulnerable to it, a lot of those old trees and so on, many of which are still damaged from it and are still coming down. I've lived on the peninsula, you know, in the north end or the west end basically my entire time here, brief time in the south end. But a lot of those trees are very damaged and they're still coming down every time there's a good gust of wind like we had last night. Today being November 23rd, when you're listening to this, we had the big rainstorm last night, which maybe not as
they oversold
as
it a bit.
Well, or maybe the weather behaved differently than predicted.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, this is sort of a broad question to ask, and maybe I don't know what your recall's like. Do you have a favorite story? Do you have a favorite interview? Yeah, sort of, you do a lot. There's
do
a lot.
I have, do I, no, I don't really have favorite stories or favorite interviews. I have stories and interviews I remember, but I don't really measure it as sort of favorite or least favorite anymore. I mean, there have been people I've met who've been absolutely incredible, who are completely unforgettable. But I don't know that favorite is the right description.
Right. I mean,
word.
Well, to go back to Hurricane One, I was at the coast then, and Barrington Street had power. So we went to the Kyber Building, and we cranked out a paper. And it's hard to explain because it sounds callous, but when people can come together and still, like, make it happen against all odds, it's sort of thrilling, isn't it?
It is, and that's really what journalism is all about. You mentioned the coast, by the way. I've always loved the coast. I liked the coast because it had the little engine that could sort of attitude about it. But the coast is also a really good, I guess, a good example. Like, making a television program is a very good example of how a lot of people have to be working together in order to make it work. And in anchored television programs like the sort that I've had the honor to do for the last number of years, I mean, I get a disproportionate amount of attention and certainly a disproportionate amount of credit, because I'm not sitting there without about 40 other people who have to be doing their job and doing it well in order to make that happen. So, yeah. It's a team effort, all right.
Well, speaking of that,
yep.
Your sign-off is from my colleagues on both sides of our cameras.
Right.
When did you implement that, and how did it develop?
Okay, well, the sign-off, the both sides of the cameras part, I don't remember when I started to say that, but it did occur to me early in my days in TV that there are way more people you don't see than do. Mm-hmm. It's also true in radio, by the way. It's true in this, even in this
this little podcast?
In this podcast, yeah. I mean,
we talk about Palmer a lot.
Okay, well, there's no podcast without Palmer.
That's right.
And we don't sound good without Palmer.
That's very true.
But the truth is, in television particularly, there are a lot of people on the other side of the camera. There's an exponential relationship between, pardon me, the technical and production teams and the on-air people. So it does seem appropriate to me to acknowledge the people that you don't see. Mm-hmm. And but I don't remember exactly when that was. It's probably 25 years anyway.
Wow.
The other part of my sign off that people ask me about is be well. And I will tell you that when I used to travel to the Bahamas, WABC television was carried on local cable, which at that time, by the way, was owned by Jeff Sterling in Newfoundland.
Wow.
And Bill Butel was the anchor of Eyewitness News on Channel 7, WABC New York. He ended his newscast every night by saying, good luck and be well. And I always thought that I liked the be well part of it more than the good luck part of it, but I didn't want to appropriate it as long as Bill Butel was using it, because I knew that it was his. But when he retired, I felt it was okay to borrow the be well. And I like be well because it isn't have a good evening. I throw have a good evening in as well. But being well is not about having a good evening. Being well is about be well, you know, mentally well, physically well. Hope you feel well. And I just like the idea of being well. I do like the idea of being lucky, but I love the idea of being well.
Amazing. So you've been Steve Murphy your whole life.
I was also
Tara Thorne whole life.
You weren't?
No, I am.
Okay. I was Steven to almost everybody until I got into radio.
Right.
Yeah. And then the boss said, no, Steven's too much. Go with Steve. Nobody really called me Steve.
Interesting.
And most of the people I've known from childhood still don't.
Interesting.
My mother never did. But yeah.
But you walk around. People know who you are. You have a very recognizable voice. What does being Steve Murphy mean when you're not on the air anymore? Maybe I'll ask you next year.
I don't know. But the thing is, you know, this is what we do, not who we are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you're a journalist, you're a musician. It's what you do. It's not who you are. You are Tara Thorne. I guess being on TV and being a reporter, being an anchor is what I do for a living, but it isn't really who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes chuckle because when I'm not working, if I'm out slobbing around in a, you know, ball cap and jeans, and somebody says, you're incognito. And I go, obviously not. But the fact is, you know, I mean, I got a suit and tie on now, but only because I'm working. When I get home tonight, I won't be wearing a suit and tie.
Right.
You know, I'll be into the, what I call the sloppy clothes.
The leisure wear.
Leisure wear. Not a leisure suit. Please, please don't go there. I went through the 70s once. I don't need to do that again.
I want to end on a very serious topic, which is that like me and like Don Connolly, you do not know how to drive a car.
That's not true.
It's not.
I know how to drive a car.
I don't have a license to drive a car.
Yeah, that's right. I think Don knows how to drive. Don, do you know how to, do you know how to drive a car?
I mean, he's from Bathurst. He probably does.
I'm thinking.
Will you ever bother? This is a question that I get. And I've had a few people.
Will I ever bother to get a license?
Yeah.
I think I will, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You think? Yeah. Like, are we going to go to driver's ed together? Like, that's the other thing. You have to go through. You have to do the course.
If you can get Don, the three of us could go to driver's ed together.
I would love that. What a podcast that would be.
Yeah. I do think, though, I might get a license. The truth is, because of the way my life and career unfolded, I haven't had the use of a car. But I think I may want to use a car now.
So do you take as many cabs as Don did, or do you live within walking distance? I mean, Don kind of did too, but it was the middle of the night, so he would take a cab.
I take a few. I like to walk.
Yeah.
If it's on the peninsula, I'm going to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I, by nature, am not a car person. So, like, if there was a crime committed and I witnessed it and a car was the key information, it's not getting solved. Are you a car person? Like, do you have a dream car that you would want?
I'm not really a car person, although I can appreciate a beautiful automobile when I see one, and there are some real beautiful cars. But no, I'm not a car person, unless it's got a roof light on it. Then I'm a casino taxi kind of person. I would think that among the three of us, Thorne, Connolly, and me, that could be a bit of a Dublin law firm, you know. Thorne, Connolly, and Murphy. Don't we own casino taxi by now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I am not comparing myself to the two of you, by the way.
Oh, I think you've done your share. I think you've done your share.
Are you hosting Christmas Daddies this year?
I'm going to be hosting Christmas Daddies as long as they want me.
Amazing.
That really is a project. I mean, it's a passion project for everybody at ATV.
Mm-hmm.
Started there.
Yeah.
1964 in the same building. So, oh yeah. And I, in that respect, I'm going to be like a lot of people who no longer have full-time jobs there. We still have a lot of our former employees come in and pitch in for that. It's bigger than, I hope the station won't be offended. It's bigger than the TV station because it was invented by the people who work at the TV station. The company, in the beginning, it was CJCH Limited and then Chum Limited and then and Bell and all the other companies. They've always donated the airtime in the facilities, and it doesn't happen without that. But it's always been the passion project of people who work at the corner of Russell and Roby.
In my house growing up, that's what the day we decorated the Christmas tree.
Yep, a lot
it's
of people
like
do.
Put it on and then you do it. Yeah.
And I
still do that now as an adult.
And I'm told that people sometimes have beverages when they're doing it as well.
I bet they do.
What was it that we've spoken of Don a lot. We're going to have to pay him a royalty here, but what was he called it? A sarsaparilla.
Yeah. Okay.
Have so a sarsaparilla.
Your final show is 1 week from today, from the time we're talking. Do you know how you're going to go out? Do you have any thoughts? Is it going to be a regular night?
Well, it'll be driven by the news agenda of the day. Obviously, you know, if there's a major news event, that's what the news is going to be about. I will take maybe a minute or two at the end and thank a few people. I don't really think that it's about taking, it's not a big soliloquy.
There's not like a special happening?
There is some kind of show happening, but I don't know what's going on with it. They've really kept me out of it, and I'm pretty relieved, frankly.
Yeah.
But as for what I'm going to say at the end, I can sum it up by saying that I'm very grateful, and I have been a very fortunate person, and I'm just grateful for the many years that people have put up with me agitating the airwaves. Who was it? I'm stealing that from somebody, too.
Well, I'm very grateful that you came to do this show. Like, I grew up watching you and to get to interview. This is my third time. It's a huge, huge honor, so I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Tara. Yeah, it's a real pleasure.
Right.
Always.
Take care. And best of luck in the next moves.
And be well.
The Tideline is engineered by Palmer Jameson at the Golden Palm and produced by the Halifax Examiner.